Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi. Here now, Tony Bruschi.
The night before Eric Richens died, Josh Grossman sent Corey a text. Josh is Corey's lover, her boyfriend on the side, her side piece, if you will. He told her he wasn't feeling well. Said he'd sat down to eat that hush puppy thing. And the next thing he knew, it was 11 o'clock at night. Hours gone, vanished. He got sick and he didn't know why. He didn't ask too many questions. He was in love. The next day, Eric Richens, her husband, totally different guy, dead after something he ate that involved Corey Richens. Coincidence? And there's also been some reporting that the boyfriend, Grossman's dog, even died. What the hell was that? A jury of 8 people spent 3 hours reviewing 3 weeks of evidence and reached a conclusion against Corey Richens. Guilty. All 5 counts. Aggravated murder, attempted murder, insurance fraud, forgery. Unanimous. Corey Richens, 35-year-old mother of 3, real estate agent, we put that in air quotes, and published author of children's grief book, or ghost author of children. She's not really the author. She hired someone to write a grief book. Lowered her head as the judge read the verdict. It took 3 hours. Not 3 days. Not a week of agonizing deliberation. 3 hours to look at everything this woman did and said and searched and texted and forged and agree without a single holdout. There was only one explanation for all of it. That's not a close call. That's called a conclusion. Love to get your thoughts in the comment section as we work through this. The verdict in the trial of Corey Richens. Guilty. Always like to see a good narcissist go down, don't you? 42 prosecution witnesses testified over 3 weeks. The defense called 0. Gee, that was a good call there. Let's just do nothing. That'll work out. That'll help the client. Corey Richens chose not to take the stand in her own defense, so the jury was left with exactly what prosecutors put in front of them, a paper trail so thorough, so specific, so damningly sequential that the only remaining question was whether 8 people could follow it to its logical end. They did in 3 hours. I bet if they didn't have dinner, they would have been done sooner. But they wanted to have a little bit of time to enjoy their Quiznos. Is yours toasted? Mine's not toasted. They didn't toast it. What's wrong with these people? That right there, there's 5 minutes of deliberation over toasted subs. I have no idea if they had Quiznos or not. I'm just throwing that in there. But seriously, they had to eat. They were hungry. So take the hour of dinner out of the mix, and you'd probably get this done in less than 2 hours, really. They walked into that room when you see a 3-hour verdict, and they knew their answer walking in. There wasn't a lot of deliberating. There was a lot of, what do you guys think? Okay. I mean, we'll find out. We'll find out when the jurors actually talk. But 3 hours, nobody needed a hell of a lot of convincing. The evidence stood on its own. Let's go back to January 9th of 2022. Corey Richens texted Josh Grossman and asked him whether he's ever done drugs besides marijuana. How recently? She frames it casually. She's been watching a show about the opioid epidemic. She says, It reminded her to ask, you know, like you just do, randomly asking people that question after you watch documentaries about drug use. I do the same thing after I watch Breaking Bad, don't you? I walk up to everybody. You got any of the blue stuff? You doing that? Like what? Watch a lot of Breaking Bad. Then they saw a woman building a baseline, learning what her boyfriend had already been exposed to, figuring out what his system could handle. At the time, it probably seemed like an odd but harmless question. Looking at it now with everything that followed, it kind of reads like research. 5 weeks later, Valentine's Day, February 14th of 2022, Corey had made plans to spend the day with her boyfriend Grossman. Instead, she made Eric a sandwich and sent it to him. Eric Richens broke out in hives. He blacked out. He texted his wife that he was thinking about going to the hospital. She told him to take a nap. Take a little nap, honey. Then she went silent for 2 hours and hung out with her boyfriend. Eric thought, you know, maybe she'd come home to help him. According to prosecutors, she was in Provo waiting for a cabinet contractor. He survived. He later joked to friends that Corey had tried to poison him on Valentine's Day. Thought it was kind of a funny story. Yeah, I got real sick after Corey dropped off that sandwich for me. Didn't see her much of the day, but, you know, she was the only Valentine she gave me might have made me sick. Funny story. It wasn't a funny story because then came March 3rd, the night before Eric died, and this is where the picture becomes something you can't unsee. According to more text messages entered into evidence at trial, Grossman told Corey that night that he wasn't feeling well. The day before Eric died, said he'd sat down to eat that hush puppy thing that she'd given him and didn't remember a thing until 11 p.m. Hours of his life gone. The boyfriend didn't understand what happened to him. He was texting the only person who did. Prosecutors and analysts who reviewed the evidence drew a specific conclusion from that sequence. She'd already attempted it on Eric in February. She may have used Grossman the night before to calibrate the dose to confirm it worked or didn't. This is a weird thought process here. This, I wonder in itself, could be attempted murder or I don't know what. Although we have talked about this on the show, there might not have been an attempt at all on Grossman's life. I know it's like, well, what do you mean by that? I mean, just handling the stuff. Did she handle it? And then handle something that he was going to eat and just the residue of it then affected him. I mean, it's kind of, you take a second to look at this and go, well, why did it affect Corey? It was on her hands, right? Yes, but she didn't ingest it. There's a difference to the way the body will be affected by it. I would honestly be curious, though, to know if Corey herself had any sort of ill reaction in any way, shape, or form. Not obviously horrible enough to stop anything, but enough to go, maybe I should wear gloves next time. Because that really could be how Grossman got ill. Just the handling. We may have learned Corey doesn't wash her hands all that often, to be completely honest. That may be the lesson in this part of the story. Corey is not really as cleanly as we all think. Moscow Mule, made for Eric the next day. The drink Eric got contained five times the lethal dose of fentanyl, not medical grade street fentanyl, the kind you have to go looking for. And she did, to her housekeeper, and she went to her friend. They got it, the Michael Jackson stuff. And they're like, that's propofol. Yeah, I know, but Corey didn't know what the hell anything was called. Corey's not the brightest bulb, if you haven't caught on by this trial and her millions of dollars of debt and poor decision-making process. She's what you call colloquially a fucking idiot. I know, it's a term that, reserved for the special ones. So sometime in early 2022, prosecutors say Corey contacted an acquaintance asking to purchase medication, telling her it was for an investor. When that source suggested hydrocodone, Corey allegedly asked for something stronger, something like the Michael Jackson drug. She knew what Michael Jackson died from, or that he died, basically. Something, some drug. And that's what she wanted. She eventually got something. According to testimony through her housekeeper, Carmen Lauber, who purchased fentanyl pills through a street dealer, up to 90 of them. She needed something that would kill, and she knew enough to ask for it by reputation. Now look at the money, because that's what prosecutors say this was always about at its core. Corey Richens was $4.5 million in debt. Her real estate business was collapsing. She owed lenders more than $1.8 million and was being actively sued by a creditor. Eric's estate was worth over $4 million. She'd taken out multiple life insurance policies on him without his knowledge, totaling nearly $2 million. And in the weeks before he died, she allegedly forged his signature on a new application for additional coverage. A handwriting expert testified at trial that Eric Richens did not sign that document. Here's the part that sharpens all of it. Eric knew something was wrong. In October 2020, a full year and a half before his death, he consulted a divorce attorney, then an estate planner. He restructured everything. He opened a living trust, placing his assets under his sister's control for the benefit of his three children. He transferred his business interest. He was systematically removing Corey from the equation. The window was closing. According to prosecutors, she knew it, so she closed it herself. The text messages didn't leave much room for interpretation. In December 21, she wrote to Grossman, "We both know this love triangle can't go on forever. You don't deserve it. I don't deserve you. I can't expect you to sit around for the day." The trigger gets pulled. The trigger. Her word, not a figure of speech. A countdown of sorts. Less than a month before Eric died, she asked Grossman if he'd marry her. Well, it was more like, if he could just go away and you could just be here, life would be so perfect. The week of Eric's death, she texted Grossman, "Can I try Friday? Give me a few days. Hang in there until, please. Until then, please." They had brunch plans for March 4th to get together. A celebration of her real estate closing was the plan. Well, that didn't happen. Not exactly. She celebrated with some other folks, not Grossman. Grossman testified he never once interpreted that as meaning Eric would be dead by then. He was in love. He wasn't thinking that, you know, wait till Friday, give me a few days, hang in there until then, please, meant anything more than just, I'll see you Friday to celebrate the real estate deal. On the night of March 3rd, Grossman sent her an animated GIF image, a GIF, two people kissing, captioned, "Love you." She responded hours later, told him she hadn't had a second. She said she loved him, said she'd talk later. That same night, he told her about the hush puppies, about the hours he couldn't account for. She read that message. She knew exactly what it meant. She knew because she was the one who allegedly given him some food. We don't know a ton of details about this exchange, but again, weird. The next morning, Eric was dead. She texted Grossman two words, "Eric passed away, then talk later." She told him they thought it was an aneurysm. Very specific, very settled. Ready before the body was even cold. Here's what happened. It was an aneurysm. Nobody knows the answer to this question, but Corey did. Corey had answers. When Carmen Lauber, the housekeeper who procured the pills, called and said, "Please tell me those pills were not for him," Corey didn't flinch. No, they were not. Eric passed away from a brain aneurysm. Same answer, same words. The story was already locked. Her phone told investigators what she'd actually been thinking about. What is a lethal dose of fentanyl? Women, Utah prisons, luxury prisons for the rich in America. If someone is poisoned, what does it go down in the death certificate as? Can cops force you to lie to a lie detector test? She wasn't grieving. She was in damage control, and she started before anyone knew there was damage. The day after Eric died, she signed closing documents on a $2.9 million mansion. She had dreamed of owning property like that, she told Grossman. She grew up scrubbing toilets for rich people in Park City and swore she'd own one of those homes one day. She signed those papers while her husband's body was being examined. And then came the book. A children's picture book about loss, about a father with angel wings watching over his young son, she dedicated it to her amazing husband, the man this jury has now found she murdered. She appeared on local Utah television to promote it. Warm, composed, tearful in the right moments. Prosecutors noted at trial that text messages revealed she didn't even write the damn thing. A ghostwriter did. She performed the grief. She packaged it. She put her name on the cover and her dead husband's memory on the title page, and sold it to the public that had no idea they were looking at the aftermath of a calculated killing. And through all of it, every forged signature, every calibrated dose, every rehearsed lie, every television appearance, three little boys were just living their lives. They didn't know their father had been scared. They didn't know their mother had spent months acquiring the drug that would kill him. They didn't know that the woman who tucked them in had already tried it on Valentine's Day. That she'd been running tests. That she'd Googled what prison she might prefer if things went wrong. They were just kids. They just knew their dad died one morning and didn't come back. And then their mom got arrested. And then the cameras came. And they've been in guardianship ever since. Three boys have spent 4 years watching their last name become a headline. They lost their father because of what their mother did. Then they lost their mother to the consequences. Corey Richens didn't just kill Eric Richens. She detonated every stable, safe, ordinary thing those children had. And then wrote a book about the explosion, their grief. She literally tried to suck in the grief. The empathy of others that would be thinking about her children. She wanted that. She wanted that too. That's how much of a vampire this bitch is. She manufactured her own reality. She packaged their loss. She took it on television. She built a public identity out of the wreckage of a family. She destroyed on purpose. She made herself the victim. You think these people are like no one could possibly do that? Meet a borderline. Meet a narcissist to that nth degree. These people are capable of anything. There is no empathy. There is no feeling. There is just a motor that goes. And no walls to keep them in. They will go off the cliffs. They will destroy themselves. I always say this 1,000 times. You don't really have to do much when you're dealing with a borderline or someone with narcissistic personality disorder. Again, we can't diagnose her. We don't know what she has. If that's what she is, which I highly suspect, if you did diagnose her, you'd get something along those lines. That's my opinion, not a fact. So if we're looking at her just as resembling those personality types, let this be the lesson to be learned. You don't have to do anything to have them destroy their world. They will do it on their own. Just sit back and relax and don't get in the way. And make sure you're not part of their destruction process. I mean, get out of the way. Get out of the way. That's the lesson for anybody with that type of personality in or around them. Get the F out of the way, because you're not going to do anything by standing in front of them. It's like standing in front of an F5 tornado going, "Hey, guy, stop. We don't want the wind here. It's no go." When the tornado just plows through you and you die. You can watch the radar all you want and see the storm coming. That's what so many of us do. Well, if I just know more, if I just educated on this better, I'll be able to handle it. Yeah, if the tornado comes, the best you can do is get in the lowest place possible. Standing out in front of it, trying to reason with it, trying to tell it to stop, ain't going to stop it. It ain't going to stop a borderline, and it's not going to stop a narcissist. You will get hurt. So get out of the way and let it do its thing and watch it dissipate and disappear into the ether, because that's what will happen. It may stick around for a while. It may cause more chaos. But eventually, if you don't feed it, if the atmosphere changes, if it's no longer conducive to that storm system moves on. It needs something to feed on. And if you don't provide the correct atmospheric environment for it to thrive and live and feed off of like a thunderstorm does. It'll go. It'll find another place. It'll find a better atmosphere to produce chaos in. That's how you have to look at these freaking monsters, because that's exactly what they are. The housekeeper who sold her pills went on the stand. She said finding out Eric died of an overdose hit hard. She said she needed to step up and take accountability for her part. Carmen Lauber, a drug dealer, found more accountability in that moment than Corey Richens has shown at any point in 4 years. About 2 weeks after Eric died, Corey and Grossman drove up to the Utah mountains and talked for hours. At some point during the conversation, she asked him if he'd ever killed anyone while serving in Iraq. She asked him how it made him feel. Prosecutors told the jury she was working through her own feelings on the subject. It's called projection. Again, these people aren't that hard to read once you know what to look for. They ask obvious shit, thinking they're being really sneaky and really covert. She's looking for permission, maybe, or just for company in something she was carrying alone. The boyfriend, Grossman, was gutted on that witness stand, a grown man, head down, unable to look at his own text messages on the courtroom screen. He thought she loved him. He thought he was her future. He was, according to prosecutors, a tool she used, and looks like nearly a victim himself. Brad Bloodworth stood before the jury and told them, see through her facade, check her ambition. Do not let her get away with murder. And then he went back in his casket. Mr. Bloodworth. They did. 8 people, 3 hours, 5 counts, guilty. Sentencing is now set for May 13th, so grab your popcorn. Aggravated murder in Utah carries a mandatory life sentence. The only remaining question is whether parole is possible. Given the premeditation, the repeated attempts, the forgery, the fraud, the calculated construction of a cover story before her husband was even cold, that's a difficult argument for any attorney to make with a straight face. But you know, Kathy Nestor, she's pulled other things out. The book is still out there. Her name is still on the cover. The dedication to her amazing husband is still on the inside pages. No verdict's going to change that. What a verdict can do is call it what it is. The night before Eric Richens died, she read a text from the man she claimed to love, telling her he'd lost hours. He couldn't explain. She knew what happened to him. She knew because she'd handed him food. She knew because she'd been working towards this for months. She read that message, sat down on her phone, and texted the next morning. The next morning, the next day, the next evening, she made her husband a drink. The jury saw it, and in 3 hours, it took the rest of us 4 years. Your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube and Substack. Love for you to weigh in. We have more on Corey throughout the week as we take a deeper dive and really take a look through the prism now of just, she did this, all of her actions, what they all mean. We've been looking at it from a prism of if, now it is. And it's a dark, dark place to travel. Join us, shall you? Press subscribe so you don't miss any of it. We will see you in the comments and continue our conversation there. Until then, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.